Joshua's Daughter, written and read by Benjamin Glatt, music composed and performed by John B. Wooden.
Father, tell me a story. Another one, child? Please? All right, I'll tell you a very special story. Then it's time for sleep. Okay. She shifted her blankets and looked up expectantly. Once upon a time, Commissioner Soche visited the human ghetto. He was the first Vetch politician in all the 90 years since the ghetto had been built to set foot in it. And by necessity, he was visiting in secret. He had asked and cajoled and shamed and lightly threatened, all in the attempt to make this excursion an official function of state. A gesture that would be as courageous as it was politically unwise. But he had been overruled at every level, so now it came down to this. A trip under the cover of darkness, with only the tiny floating shapes of his mute bodyguards to accompany him. He entered the ghetto from the east side, where it abutted the second prefecture. There, security was lax, as it was almost impossible for a human to make the climb up the steep metal walls and into the city. Nobody was looking for a Vetch, especially not a hero of the revolution to be going into the ghetto. It was an easy climb down. The sloped metal walls had been designed for use by his people, after all, and before he even had time to be nervous, he was under the cover of the squat, makeshift houses of the humans. Soche had wondered what the ghetto would be like. He had imagined many things, a more run-down version of the Fifth Prefecture, perhaps. Maybe the upper decks of one of the great passenger ships. But he had not expected this. This was the camps all over again. The buildings weren't as organized, and there were more people. A lot more people. But the smell was the same. The feeling of the strange colony organisms that were humans was the same, and the desperation was the same. He had come to know what human desperation looked like in all its many forms, and this was the real article. He couldn't stay here. He couldn't. Soche felt the attack coming before it happened, and reflexively slumped down against the base of a wall. Then it was on him, the fear, the panic, washing over him in waves as his tentacles writhed and thrashed and tied themselves in impossibly painful knots. He grasped for air as the little bodyguards hovered close over him to shield him from prying eyes and any danger. The attack passed as it had come, retreating in waves, as fainter and fainter images of the camp slip before him, the torture rooms, the human ball game played in the rain, Joshua lying still. He stood up gingerly. His tentacles ached and spasmed as he rose, but he was used to this now. He hadn't had an attack this bad for months, but he remembered how to recover. He took deep breaths of the stale air and recited one of the old rhymes about the moon and the moss and the gentle lap of the ocean until he was back in the present, in the ghetto, looking for a woman he had never seen. She was blonde, but not very blonde. Dirty, Joshua had said, and she was about 1.5 meters tall. Her name was Cynthia, and she had a child. Joshua's child. That was it. That was all Soche had to go on. And he had really thought it would be enough. But he had badly underestimated the size and scope of the ghetto. Not only did it sprawl for miles of densely packed buildings, but the humans had built up and dug down to make more room. The place was so confusing, he had to periodically check his satellite map to prevent himself from being lost. It was also crowded. He had thought that in the night more of them would be asleep, but no, the streets were full of people and the lights stayed on past all reason as the desperate, unhappy humans surged around him. He hated it. He had hated it then and he hated it even more now. It was the look in their eyes, the fear, the hopelessness, the deadness that from experience he knew could explode in an instant into violence. And could subside just as quickly into an irate surrender that was almost worse. It was the look of a people who had been defeated again and again, so often that defeat had become as much a part of them as their hands. He had only seen one thing banish that expression, one thing that could light a spark in the dead eyes and make dirty, broken men, killers, thieves, and dissidents grin like little boys. Joshua's stories. He remembered their bright eyes, full of wonder, staring out from the bunks and sunken, wasted faces. He plunged deeper into the ghetto, his mind full of old friends and old scars. "Sorry," the human muttered as he veered out of Soche's way. He was deeper than ever in the human maze, and his little bodyguards were flitting around him, nervously trying in vain to keep the crowds back. "Have you seen the woman Cynthia?" he asked for perhaps the thousandth time that evening, and again he was met with a blank stare of confusion. That was the most common reaction. Some told him they hadn't, then rushed off. Few had said yes, but their descriptions hadn't come close to Joshua's. How common a name was Cynthia? If she were Vet, she would have a family name, a number, a use name, and a name in the old language. No two Vetch had ever had exactly the same name, but it seemed to be endemic with humans. Then he heard it. The phrase. The only phrase he had ever truly memorized in the human language. Once upon a time. It came from the end of the street, where children were gathered around a storefront. Soche began pushing his way through the crowds toward the words. Humans melted back as he moved quickly through them, as though they had only been waiting for his need. He was at the end of the street now, and before him an old man sat under a sign by a shop and told a story. Unlike Joshua, his story was in a human language, so Soche had to depend on his translator, but it had the same rise and fall, the same style and inflection as his old friend. And around the old man's feet children sat, and listened with a rapture the Vetch remembered well. The man finished his story, and the children began to drift off. Some of the younger ones stayed to talk to the old man and ask him about the characters in the story. Soche was loath to interrupt them, but he was on a mission. So the commissioner moved into the circle. The children and the old man fell silent. Vetch didn't come this far into the city of the humans. "I am looking for the woman Cynthia." "Why?" It was a simple question, but Soche found himself struggling with the answer. How much should he tell these people? "I have news of her. About Joshua." There was a stir in the old man, as though a gentle breeze had passed over a fragile leaf. "He's dead, then?" The old man said it with such certainty that Soche almost caught himself confirming the man's suspicions. "I apologize. My message is for Cynthia." "Have it your way, Vetch. Aaron, come here." The little girl came trundling forward from the group of children. "Take this octopus man to your mother. He has something to tell her. And go quick." The girl nodded, reached up, and grabbed one of Soche's tentacles. He was shocked. He had seen humans do this, but it wasn't a Vetch gesture, and her hand felt strange, warm, moist, and coarse against the delicate forked end of his tentacle. "Come with me." And she nearly pulled him off balance as she suddenly took off at half a run. He had to calm his bodyguards and prevent them from attacking the human child, who was pulling him through the streets. "Why are we going so fast?"
"Grandfather said go quick,"
she said in a voice that would brook no debate, but she slowed a little. "What's it like to be an octopus man?"
"A Vetch, child. My people are called Vetch. And I'm not sure what it's like to be a Vetch. I've never been anything else. What is it like to be a little girl?"
"Mostly tag. And grandpa's stories, and sometimes we get sweets from the city." She was walking slower now and looking up at him with wide, curious eyes, when all of a sudden she stopped.
"Why do you have so many arms?"
"Evolution."
"What's evolution?"
"It's a process by which organism..." "I'm sorry, child. I can answer your questions later. I need to speak to Cynthia. How far are we?"
"Oh, we're here. That's why I stopped."
And she pointed to a shack on Soche's left that was, as far as he could tell, indistinguishable from the others. Aaron opened the door and pulled Soche inside. It was dimly lit by an ancient bioluminescent jar light, and at the table sat his quarry. She wasn't much like Joshua had described her.
He had talked about a radiant, beautiful woman who exuded life and vitality. Soshe had only the rudest sense of what passed for beauty among humans, but he knew a beaten person when he saw one, and Cynthia looked as beaten as any he had ever seen. The table was littered with bottles and wires he didn't recognize, and the place smelled oh so faintly of decay. "Cynthia? Aaron, is that you? Who's there? Or who is that?" And she fell sideways off her chair, taking a timpani section worth of bottles and beakers and metal pans with her. She fought her way to her feet, as though she were on the deck of a ship in heavy storm, and leaned against the table looking balefully at Soshe. "What are you doing here, Octopus Man? We don't get your people down here. Get tired of your pretty city and come down to look at all the sad little humans?" There was obvious venom in her voice, but something else, too. Something far more disturbing. It was as though she were speaking through a fog, a lethargy that betrayed something deeply wrong. "They're called Vetch," Aaron chimed in helpfully. She seemed somehow unaware of her mother's strangeness. "Shut up," Cynthia snapped at her daughter. Soshe was taken aback, but he didn't know enough about humans and their children to know what to do, so he forged ahead. "My name is Soshe Venosa." He decided to use the short form of his name. "I have come bearing terrible news, Cynthia. Your husband Joshua has passed from this life." He stood, tentacles wound three times around each other in respect, waiting for her grief and her questions. "Oh." He waited. "I'm sorry if this news is sudden. I'm not familiar with human customs for this. If it's any comfort, he died as he lived, a great man." She was silent for a long moment, looking down at the floor, her hair lying dead and moist on her shoulders. "Did you come here to mock us?" Her voice was quiet, and the edge was stronger. "He's been dead for 2 years, and you come here with your fancy robes and he died, a great man? Are you kidding? He was an idiot who got himself carted away for nothing, leaving me... And he died a... Why are you telling me? What do you want, Octopus?" "Cynthia." And he tried as hard as he could to inject what humans perceived as warmth into his voice. "I did not come to mock you. Joshua saved my life in more ways than one, and he asked that I come to tell you and his daughter what happened. I only came to tell you how he died and that he loved you and to offer any help I could. I'm sorry." He stood in silence for a long moment, waiting for Cynthia to say anything, but she seemed to have lost the power of speech entirely. "Who's Joshua?" Aaron piped up. It was such an unexpected question that Soshe almost answered reflexively, but he knew this was not his place, and he wasn't entirely sure what he should do. But, for the first time, Cynthia seemed ready with an answer. "Ask the Octopus Man. Apparently Joshua was some sort of hero." The venom seemed to be gone from her. She just sounded tired, and the defeat was palpable. "Tell us how the damn fool died." He looked down at the woman, who was so much less than he had been expecting, and almost refused. But Joshua had loved her. And there was the child with his friend's eyes. So he began his story. The guards had finished with him, and he lay half-dead in the mud, one of his tentacles curled, bleeding next to him. Then came the humans. They stood around him in stony silence until one reached out with his toe and prodded him. He groaned as the foot brushed against his bruised side. Then, as if on cue, they began jabbering amongst themselves, and a few of them prodded him again and again until the prods came closer to kicks. He knew he wouldn't last long if one of them kicked him in earnest. It would crack his skull plate wide open, and he would be dead. He did what any good vetch would do, and certainly any revolutionary. He began to recite the poem of his death. It was as his teachers had told him. The words of the old language rushed to his lips as he lamented the cruel irony of high ideals being kicked to death by ignorance in the mud. He felt a sense of fierce melancholy pride. It was a great poem, and like all the greatest, it would never be heard by those who would truly understand it. Then the kicking stopped, and he had been there, being there to lift Soshe out of the mud and bring him back. Joshua, the storyteller. They weren't great stories. The part of him that had trained for a semester as a literature critic thought them unfocused, derivative, and sentimental. But they were magic. He had heard his verse when he had laid sick and broken that first night after Joshua had bound his wounds and put him under a thin blanket. He had lain there repeating his aborted death poem to himself and wondering how long it would take him to need it again when the story began. He didn't understand all of the words, and half the joke sailed over his head, but he felt it. The rise and fall of Joshua's voice, the way he brought the audience close and raised their tension before releasing it in a gust of laughter or sighs before lifting them again. It was an odd story, all about a funny man and his talking cat, but the magic lay not in the halls of the character's strange hotel, but in the faces of the men. They were spellbound, and when the story came to its humorous conclusion, they roared with laughter and returned to their cold, hard beds, still chuckling. If Soshe closed his eyes and listened to the murmurs as the men dropped off to sleep, he would never have guessed that they were prisoners, men who were never expected to leave. In the darkness, they could have been partygoers, murmuring and joking on their long-lost world after a night of fun with old friends. And Soshe found that he had forgotten the words of his last poem. That night, and for the nights after, Joshua told Soshe many things. They talked long after the others had gone to sleep. Joshua was intelligent, perhaps brilliant, and his mind had been starved for 2 years in the camp. He was desperate for news about politics, culture, the revolution and his people, the humans in the slums. He listened raptly to Soshe's stories of the high politics of revolution, the speeches that got brave men killed, secret meetings and hidden plots within plots. He listened as the others listened to his stories. Soshe could tell him little about the humans, but he did as much as he could. And Joshua told Soshe his own stories. About Cynthia, about a daughter who had been less than 2 years old, about the robbery that got him sent to the camps, and a thousand other tales, great and small, in those quiet hours. Talking across the Vetch language that sounded so strange on human lips, they became friends. His friendship, even more than his physical protection, saved Soshe as the months became years and the labor and isolation of the camps became unbearable. His jokes and songs and strange opinions made the labor not only bearable, but sometimes even fun. They would debate issues as wide-ranging as morality, history, and music. They even talked at great length about the always touchy subject of the human ghetto, and about the Vetch prejudice that created it. Over the months, Joshua convinced Soshe to trade in his apathy regarding the humans for concern, and even a firm commitment to make things better. In turn, Joshua became a believer in the cause of the revolution, and even injected some of its ideas into his stories. They would share stories about friends and family and lovers left behind. When other men gave into their despair and died, Soshe and Joshua survived. Something in having someone to talk to, someone who could imagine a world beyond the camp, made all the difference. Until the last month of their imprisonment. Until Joshua told his last story. The revolution was coming to its shockingly bloodless conclusion, as the leaders of the old order were rounded up and imprisoned one by one. They had been threatening only days before the arrest began to call in the fleet and place the capital under martial law. But much to their consternation, they found communications with the fleet mysteriously difficult, and the few commanders they could contact spectacularly unable to assist them due to a dizzying array of impossible-to-remedy technical difficulties. So, when the vanguard of the revolution came to peacefully arrest them and offer them a life of imprisoned comfort, the vast majority took it. The men in the camp knew something was happening. The guards had pulled back and were suddenly treating the prisoners that were still alive, and especially Soshe, with something approaching deference. They were confusing days, full of rumors and gossip, and no one was certain if that meant their salvation or their death. Into this uncertainty, Joshua told his last story. It began as all the others had, with that phrase, "Once upon a time." It was a story about stories and those who told stories. It was a story about the loss of home and family and endless wandering. Joshua poured his heart into it. All the anger and frustration of the camps and before the camps, all the hope that seemed just a little way off, to tell a story unlike any he had ever told. And it stirred something in them, something that had bubbled beneath the surface for years, something that was so much closer now that the world seemed so uncertain, and in a movement like an avalanche gathering speed, they revolted. They climbed the towers, they burst into the guards' barracks, and some tried to run. It didn't work. The guards were too well armed, and they cut the prisoners down. Soshe didn't see the shot that killed his friend, but he did get to him before he died in the mud of the courtyard, as people were gunned down around them. And Soshe heard Joshua's last poem. It wasn't in poetic form, and it wasn't in the old language, but it was clear. He spoke of his family and begged Soshe to find them and tell them what had happened, to help them if he could. And like a hero from one of his stories, Joshua died as the world burned around him. In that last week of my imprisonment, Joshua's final charge kept me going. I might have died of my injuries, or of loss or despair, but I had a promise to keep. And so I came to tell you the news of his death, and to offer any help I can. I want you to know that I will do everything within my now considerable powers to help the human cause. It will be a long, slow fight, but one I have every intention of winning. He sat back and waited for Cynthia to say something. But she was staring off into the distance as though she were seeing a world far away from the little shack. Aaron had no such inhibition. "Was Joshua my dad?" "Yes, child, I believe so." He looked at Cynthia for confirmation, but she was still looking away, and something was strange about the look in her pale, washed-out eyes.
"But he died?"
"Yes, Aaron, I'm sorry."
"It's okay. I only just heard all that nice stuff about him. Do you want to be my new dad?"
The question so shocked Soshe he could barely respond.
I'm not sure that's..." "It's okay. It's not hard. Mom just needs to complain about you a lot and get out a picture of you when she's all funny. It would be sad to have no dad at all."
"I'm sorry, but I..."
"Why not?"
It was Cynthia. She was leaning forward, looking at Soshe with a strange intensity.
I'm sorry? Aaron, go outside for a minute. Me and Sushi here need to talk about something important."
"But I want to..."
"Go!" Cynthia ordered Aaron, and Aaron stormed out of the door, whining and blubbering as she went. "You promised him you'd help us, right?"
"Yes, I did. I have money and quite a lot of political influence, so I can..."
"Screw all that. People find out I have money, I'll be dead inside of a week. Besides, wouldn't be worth it. I'll be dead inside the year anyway."
"I'm sorry if there's anything..."
"There isn't. Not a lot of human doctors left, and your vetch doctors don't know shit about humans. But there is something you can do.
Anything, I promise."
"Do what the kid wanted."
"What?"
"Aaron. She asked you to be her dad. She doesn't know what that means. Not really. Show her."
"You want me to raise her?"
"I don't know the first thing about human children. Look around. Think I know a lot more? I can't do anything for her here. I need to do all this." She gestured at the bottles and the wires on the table. "Just to keep the pain down. I barely know what she's doing. If it keeps on like this, she'll be just like me, dying for no damn reason before she's 25. But with you, she can go to that huge, beautiful city." Cynthia was talking with an intensity and a longing that seemed to drain years and cares from her, until Soshe could just make out the woman his friend must have loved. You can make sure she gets an education, she gets a future. Please, Soshe, you promised. You promised a dying man. You said he saved your life. Now save hers, and all the debts are paid. In the end, it was no decision at all. He thought about refusing. He thought about insisting he send doctors. He even thought about visiting the ghetto to care for the child. But in the end, it was no decision. Cynthia said goodbye to Aaron in the shack. It was an awkward goodbye, full of unfamiliar hugs and confused advice. She tried to tell Aaron many things, but they were lost in her tears, and Aaron hugged her, confused by the affection, until it was time to go. The climb back over the wall was much harder with a human child in tow, and he knew he had hard days ahead. But in the end, despite his trepidation and fear, that day was the best of his life. Because that was the day you came to live with me, child. She was sound asleep. He sat by her side for a long moment, watching the rise and fall of her breathing, before he tucked a blanket in tight around her shoulders and bent down and kissed her forehead. She awoke at the touch of his beaky mouth on her forehead and murmured something so soft he could barely hear her before snuggling down in the blankets. I love you too, Aaron. Good night. And Commissioner Soshe left his human daughter to sleep.